Board members and our guest from Treasurer.
Recording in progress.
Appreciate this Africa Day. Let's enjoy it. It must remind us about ourselves, about our culture, etc., etc. And it must unite us as Africa. So you are warmly welcome in today's meeting. The purpose of the meeting is to get a briefing from Treasurer on the issues of procurement. So I believe we'll be listening, all of us, attentively, so that we are in the same page with the proposal. So without any waste of time, let me move to the next item, which is roll call. We are all welcome. Rakin, can you take us through, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, honorable colleagues from Parliament and from the Office of the Chief Procurement Office. We received an apology of Honorable Zungula, who is indicated that the speaker has got a meeting with the party leaders. And then we also received a minister and the apology of Deputy Minister. However, Deputy Minister indicated that he'll join the meeting later. And then the last one is an apology from Honorable April, who indicated that should the meeting go beyond 12, he will request that be excused at 12 o'clock. Then in the platform, Chairperson, we've got you as the Chairperson, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Mieni, Honorable April, Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Lubengo, and Honorable De Villiers. So those are the members so far who have joined the platform, Chair. And then I've also seen and admitted two colleagues from the Office of the Chief Procurement. Those are the roll calls and apologies. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Brakin. Let's note the apologies. What I can say, I'm happy about the structure. We're out of 8, we've got 5 female. Keep it up, Office of the Treasurer. Malibongwe igama lamakhosikazi. Can we move to the next item, which is adoption of the agenda? Any mover? My apology will be that I've got an emergency in hospital. I'm on the road. If I may happen to, I'm requesting that the whip takes over. I'm not appointing him, but in case that may happen, I don't want to paralyze the meeting. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the agenda?
Chair, I move that we adopt the agenda.
Honorable Kruger has moved for the adoption. Any seconder, honorable members?
I will second. Honorable De Villiers will second.
Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. Now let's in this item two to give us a briefing. I don't know, King, who's leading them, but I heard you that you have got the acting watch call there. So let us allow them to brief us, then we will engage at the end. Over to you. Who's leading us, King?
Chairperson, I think it's Mr. Daker.
Yeah, Mr. Daker, can you lead the team? and our co-host so that he can be able to flag his presentation on the screen. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honorable members in the meeting. Chair, I am one of the females, unfortunately, I'm not Mr. Dacre, but Mrs. Dacre, that you mentioned earlier on, that the way we are structured is that females, so females are well represented in the OCPO structure, Chair. appreciate the opportunity that we've been given to come and brief the community about the work that we do as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, as a division of the National Treasury. Then we had been given a brief, quite comprehensive, Chairperson, that we tried to structure our brief and our presentation around. However, Chairperson, you'll accept our apologies. And the first apology is the apology of our acting Chief Procurement Officer, who couldn't make it to the meeting today because he is attending a portfolio committee in public enterprise this morning. And our other colleagues, Ms. Paul Nomalo, as well as Ms. Estelle Sitan. So as National Treasury this morning, we are represented by myself, Mrs. Basani. I have Ntate Tumelo Ntlaba, who is the Chief Director for SACT. Chair, I will flag my presentation. I would like to get an indication if it's visible on the screen. Is it visible?
It is visible. You may proceed, Ms. Dacre.
My apology to Ms. Basani. I took it for granted and said, Mr. Dacre, my apologies.
No worries.
Your presentation.
Apology taken. I think Basana will accept the apology.
Yeah, and most definitely the apologies are accepted. Chairperson, so I think the first part of my piece with the introduction of our function as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Our mandate and our strategic imperatives as it stands. You'll see in the first slides that we have in front of us that our first key imperative is to improve the performance and efficiency of the state procurement system, and as well as develop and implement a procurement regulatory environment that is responsible to public policies and objectives of government. As part of imperative that we have, Chairperson, we are then tasked with also monitoring and ensuring, or rather enforcing, compliance with procurement prescripts, Chairperson, what we call policy norms and standards. We also have a role in leveraging government spending to contribute to sustainable economic, social, and environmental objectives, Chair. We, part of our work is to also modernize the raging information technology and communication systems. We have a strive for achieving savings on spending and improve governance and increase accountability and transparency in public procurement. Chair, what is critical as a success factor in these imperatives is also making sure that we have clear relationships and communications with our suppliers, as well as our stakeholders, to make sure that we get all the buy-in that we require, make sure that we get all the approvals and the support we may need, because these imperatives, as you may see, they're quite a lot, and they are the kind of imperatives that we believe that cannot only be achieved by ourselves as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, but with support from key stakeholders like yourselves, other government departments, the market at large, and the leadership at large, Chairperson. And I've tried so hard, Chairperson, to make sure that I do not make my presentation very long so that we can have enough time to discuss pertinent issues and discuss what may be of interest, what is of interest to the honorable members in the portfolio committee, Chairperson. In how we are structured as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we are structured in a manner that seeks to achieve the strategic imperatives as described in the previous slide. But we are structured in the manner that we've presented in the slide. We have our Chief Procurement Officer, Ntate Molefe Isaac Fani, who couldn't join us today, who sent his apologies. Within his office, we have the six chief directors, the first directorate being SAM Policy Norms and Standards, which is the chief directorate that is responsible for the development and implementation of SAM policies, norms and standards for all spheres of government. So they are the chief directorate that would issue all the regulations, that issue all the instruction notes, the circulars and guidelines that seek to prescribe the manner in which public procurement should be done. And you have, which is led by Mrs. Mpongo Malo. We have the SCM Monitoring and Compliance Chief Directorate, which is responsible for the implementation of what we call SCM governance framework and ensuring that there is monitoring of implementation of the policies that have been set by the Chief Directorate that's responsible for policy norms and standards and flow enforce compliance. That particular Chief Directorate is headed by myself. Then we also have a Chief Directorate for SCM Information and Communication Technology, which is led by Melon Tlaba, who's in the call with us today, whose sole responsibility is to modernize and automate the state supply chain management system. So this is the Chief Directorate where you find your system, such as the Central Supplier Database, the e-tender portal, e-government system. They are the team that model of IFMS. Then Chairperson, we also have a strategic procurement chief directorate that is headed by Mrs. Estelle Sitan. And role, Chairperson, is to manage the development and provision of strategic procurement services to improve performance and efficiency of state procurement system. They are the chief directorate that is mostly tasked with making sure that wherever there's large scale procurement that is done by a majority of organs of state, they implement what we call strategic sourcing, where they go and source the best way to buy those particular goods and services to take advantage of economies of scale and look at ways and areas where there can be savings. This particular chief directorate works hand in hand and or very closely with the next chief directorate, which is for transversal contracting, which the contracting is tasked with implementing contracts that are utilized by government organs of state, where they procure a large scale or large volumes of quantities of a particular items and services. Very key to the functioning of all these chief directorates is the SCM stakeholder and client management chief directorate that is responsible or that is tasked with ensuring that we are responsive to our stakeholders. We are there whenever any of our stakeholders need to engage with us, and we proactively go to our stakeholders and engage with them in matters of supply chain management in government. Chairperson, so I've really tried to summarize the work that we do around areas. The first key area was the SEM legislative framework. As you may know, that public procurement is heavily regulated or legislated, Chairperson. We have key fundamental legislations that drive public procurement. And whenever organs of state procure, it becomes imperative that they comply to this legislative framework. The overarching legislation that guides public procurement, Chairperson, section 217 of the Constitution. We have subsection 1 that provides the principles within which a SEM system within government must be conducted. And those are the principles of fairness, transparency, competitiveness, and cost effectiveness. But I think it's at this point in time also important that I mention subsection 2 and subsection 3 because they are relevant for the environment that we are currently operating in government, Chairperson, which is the subsections that provide or enables organs of state to implement policies in advancing designated groups. And subsection 3, which provides that those procurement, those preferential procurement policies must be implemented within a framework that is within national legislation. Then Chairperson, the public procurement system is then enabled through Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, as well as the so I have the BBBEE Act and all other acts that are relevant to procurement, such as the CIDB Act that is relevant for infrastructure development, as well as National Treasury Practice Notes and Instruction Notes, as well as Implementation Guide. These provide quite a complex legislative framework. And over the years, Chairperson, what has happened is that a number of prescripts have been issued in a form of practice notes or instruction notes, as well as circulars that created a fragments or fragmentation within this legislative framework. And I'm sure, as you would have seen, Chairperson, is that then over the years, we have seen the introduction of a draft procurement bill that seeks to consolidate this legislative framework and deal away with the fragmentation within the legislative framework on the policies and norms and standards, Chairperson. That must operate within this legislative framework is as depicted in the picture in front of you. We have, through our implementation guides, issued a system that seeks to enforce, I would say, three fundamental, not spheres, but rather elements of supply chain management within government. There is the demand planning element of government, which is critical. This is the element that seeks to align chain of all organs of state or for any particular organ of state to the strategic imperatives or requirements of that particular organ of state and make sure that supply chain enables and responds to what the organ of state requires to be able to deliver services or achieve its objectives. This is the element where you see demand plans and procurement plans being established and approved by accounting officers and accounting authorities. And once these plans have been approved, these that drive the procurement of an organ of state for the particular financial year. So naturally, this element would be followed by the acquisition. The acquisition element is the one that talks to the invitation of proposals from the market, as well as the evaluation and adjudication of those proposals to get to the award or of a contract to a particular service provider. And then and lead to contracting. Last aspect of supply chain management is the one that looks at logistics, which is the delivery of services, the moving of goods and services around, and the storage of service of goods and their warehousing, as well as whenever it's assets that have been procured over a period of time, they get disposed of, whether they're written off as scrap or they are sold off to an interested party. Chairperson, this is the system or the flow we have in public procurement. Overarching to that is a responsibility that we make sure that we monitor the implementation of the system and make sure that there is clear performance indicators. We evaluate the
recording in progress.
To the people. And one key enabler, as I've mentioned earlier on, is systems that automates or enables the efficiency of the system. Chairperson, over the years, we have identified quite a number of challenges with the systems, and National Treasury has tried to issue instruction notes and more guidelines to try and respond to the challenges that have been identified over the number of years within the system. And what I've tried in this presentation, Chairperson, is to unpack at a high level the challenges that we have identified in these different elements of the system. So I've really tried to categorize them so that you can see the implications of the challenges that are experienced as you move along the value chain, honorable members. The first challenges that we have identified were around issues of demand management, which is the planning phase of procurement. And we highlight this phase as important because this is the phase that makes sure that all the procurement that is done by an organ of state is fit for the objectives and the mandate of the organ of state. If any particular organ of state doesn't get this right, everything else either becomes fruitless and wasteful. It's easier for things to become irregular. It's easy for all the procurement or some of the procurements that have been done to be lost to the state and no value for money is achieved. What we have seen is that organs of state tend not to put officials that are properly skilled and competent to make sure that they develop proper plans, procurement plans and demand plans for the organs of state. But I think more worrying is the fact that the structure that is put in place to approve the specifications of the requirements of by that particular organ of state, because it is not heavily legislated, organs of state tend not to take this aspect of procurement so seriously, and they appoint officials who are not so skilled and competent to be the one that developed specifications or requirements for the organs of state and approve those requirements for the organs of state to the extent that those requirements would be the one that would be issued out to market. Now, if you issue out to market specifications that are inferior, that an organ of state has not made sure that they meet the legislative requirements, that leads to a cancellation of bids, because later on in the value chain, if you have strong controls to detect non-compliance, you will pick up all the potential non-compliance if that particular tender is then awarded. That's when you see cancellation of bids. That's where you see that at the time things have happened and it's so late, service delivery needs to happen. And therefore, organs of state mitigate the risk of not being able to deliver services by either modifying the contracts that they have in place at that point in time, or deviate from the normal procurement process and implement what we call other means of procurement, meaning that they would take contracts that were supposed to go out on tender or should have been awarded through normal tender processes, now being appointed through what we may call limited bidding, or they follow quotations process. Sometimes they find reasons why it should be single source procurement, meaning they then prefer to go to one particular service provider for different number of reasons. Or if chairperson, they go ahead and implement or award the tender, that's where we start seeing an increase in irregular expenditure. This is disabling in developing small businesses, chairperson, because it reduces their ability to participate in public procurement. Contract modifications, you find that the service providers sometimes that are in place do not even agree to extend contracts for a shorter period of time. Sometimes they want to, they only negotiate because they know that the organ of state is in a desperate situation. They only allow them to extend the contract for periods of 6 months, sometimes 24 months, sometimes even 2 years. And that is an opportunity lost. Same as deviations, chairperson, because deviations somewhat reduces the fairness and the transparency in the procurement process. Not everybody then is given the chance to participate in that particular procurement, chairperson. So that is one of the challenges that we thought that we should highlight for you today, as challenges that negatively impact in small businesses' ability to participate in public procurement. And you will see that, chairperson, that these issues, or rather the results that come out of the failures within the procurement system, are really, really of high impact in the ability of bidders, or rather businesses, to fairly and openly participate in public procurement system. Within the acquisition element of the procurement system, Chair, we have identified that the bid evaluation committees, they are properly and sufficiently regulated and prescribed. However, we see that they are not properly constituted as well. The skills again becomes a challenge within this committee. We see that in most cases, or in some instances, people that are not properly skilled to understand the technical requirements of a particular bid get appointed to form part of this committee. And because this committee, it's an ad hoc committee, meaning that it is not a committee that is established for a particular year and the same committee sits every time there needs to be an evaluation of a tender. This committee is constituted as and when a particular tender is required to be evaluated. You find that sometimes you have members that are not familiar with the SAM regulatory framework. Again, therefore, they cannot pick up whenever there are issues with that particular tender. We have seen as well that sometimes accounting officers appoint members who are sitting in the BSC, so who were responsible for this development of the specifications for that particular tender, to be the ones that sit in the BEC evaluation of the tender. Again, that reduces the ability of that committee to identify any issues with the specifications early in the tendering stage, Chairperson, because they're the same person who developed that specification. And because of that conflict, sometimes we have noted that there is the changing of the evaluation criteria during the evaluation phase, which is not allowed by law. And that leads to non-compliance, and it would lead to the tender being irregular in later on, or the contract being irregular and the expenditure, therefore, that is being incurred. Chairperson, therefore, we're seeing in corrections, we've got separating of physical inspection and presentation from functional evaluation, and that allows sometimes for manipulation of this evaluation of the tenders. Again, Chairperson, it leads to the biggest problems that then we have within the tendering stage, or rather within the market, that reduces the ability of businesses to fairly and openly participate in tenders. Again, you see the tenders then getting cancelled if issues are picked up on time. We see contract modifications, deviations, and therefore irregular expenditure. And then, Chairperson, in the acquisition stage, we also have what we call the bid adjudication committee. The bid adjudication committee is the committee that is responsible for evaluating, or rather looking at the work that has been done by the bid evaluation committee and make a recommendation. And sometimes the bid adjudication, depending on the policy of the organ of state, have the powers to award the particular tender. But the difference between the BAC and the BEC is that the bid adjudication committee is a standing committee. It is not an ad hoc committee. Once it is constituted at the beginning of the year, it becomes the same committee throughout the year that adjudicates the tenders and recommend them for award. But what we've also seen is that sometimes the level of members that sit in bid adjudication committees are not at the right level. The bid adjudication committee and the BEC require to be constituted in writing. You find that sometimes they are not constituted in that manner. That makes it difficult to hold people accountable, makes it difficult to make the those committees valid to discharge the work that those committees are tasked with, and therefore makes the award of the tender again as well to be non-compliant or irregular. Chairperson, because the bid adjudication is constituted for the full financial year, it is the area where we've seen a lot of conflict of interest. We have seen a lot of endorsing of unfair disqualification of bidders, endorsing of incorrect calculations, changing of the scoring of BEC ratings that we have been provided, which is also not allowable by law. Whenever issues are identified by the bid adjudication committee, they are supposed to refer the matters back to the BEC for the BEC to look at the issues that have been identified and reiterate, or rather refer their recommendation back to BAC. Whether they keep the stance or change their stance based on the views of the BAC, but that's how the system is supposed to flow. Failure to implement or to discharge this responsibility, Chairperson, then further increase the probabilities of the issues that we have raised around the high cancellation of bid, the increase in contract modifications and deviations, as well as irregular expenditure. It is important to say, Chairperson, that we view contract modifications and deviations as mechanisms that are supposed to be used in exceptional circumstances. They shouldn't be in any way be used as normal or be normalized simply just because they disabled, or rather they go against the principles that are set out by our constitution in section 217 to be of public procurement. And therefore, they are allowed by law simply to make sure that the organs of state can respond to circumstances that are challenging, that were unexpected, that were unforeseen, like emergency situations and whatever else that may come up that it, as, when planning was being done, when were never anticipated, and but they're critical for ability to deliver services, Chair. What we have seen as common reasons for deviations and what we call expansions or contract modifications, Chairperson, is that organs of state use single source or sole supplier reasons. There's a big difference, Chairperson, between a sole supplier and single source. A sole supplier is circumstances where in the market, there's absolutely nobody else but one particular service provider or supplier that can meet the requirements of the organ of state. While a single source is when there are other, there are multiple role players, more than one supplier or service provider in the market. However, for particular reasons, the organ of state choose to engage through limited bidding or negotiation method one or a few a service provider and select only one. The typical example of single source is OEM status, where there's equipment that has been purchased with a particular brand. However, for the purposes of continuity and investment that has been done with that particular brand, the organ of state that chooses not to change the brand of the equipment, but continue with the similar brand if there's more than one equipment that is required. I think that's one typical example. But however, you have also reasons such as closed bid process, where you only have accreditation, where only certain suppliers, even if there's multiple suppliers in the market, but because there's accreditation that needs to be provided by the OEM, the organs of state can only approach them, the suppliers, Chairperson, excuse me, can only approach the suppliers that are accredited by the original equipment manufacturer. We've seen reasons such as business continuity, business strategies, service delivery urgency, failed tender processes, as I have mentioned, where the organs of state believe that they've done adequate market research and they believe that value for money will be attained if they deviate from normal procurement processes, leases, extension of accommodation for leases, and government to government procurement, meaning that an organ of state wanting to procure services from another organ of state and not approach the market, and as well as extension of scope, meaning that where organs of state take a tender that is already in place, or rather a contract that is already in place, and expand the scope to include scope that was not included when the tender went out to the market. Chairperson, government-to-government procurement is one of the challenging aspects, because there is no law currently that enables government to just approach another organ of state to procure services. The way that the legislative environment is structured at this point in time is such that whenever an organ of state requires goods and services, they must approach the market at large. They can procure from an organ of state, they can procure from a private sector client, but they must follow an open and transparent process to identify the service provider. However, we've seen that there are projects within government that needs to remain within government for protection of things like intellectual property. However, we have also seen organs of state going to other organs of state for services such as printing, where the printing can be done by any service provider, even companies that are within the private sector. But organs of state maybe find it easier to work with each other, and they have MOUs, and they believe that coordination will better achieve value for money if they work together and therefore procure those services. This is from another organ of state. But these are at a high level the common reasons of what we have seen as that lead to deviations and expansion of contracts, but it's not an exhaustive list. There are others, but these ones come out quite often. Chairperson, what has been worrying to us is that we have observed over the years that there has been an increase in using this method of other means, or rather the departures from the competitive bidding process, which are the deviations. We have seen an increase or the continuous modification of contracts that keeps the same service providers. We have seen that because of all these failures within the SEM system, there is increasing disputes with the Auditor General, that leads to increase in irregular expenditure, Chairperson. And as a result, you would have seen that there's an increase in compliance reviews, or rather in investigations around PPE-related matters with the Fusion Center, as proclaimed by the president. We have observed these trends with concern that directly impacts, Chairperson, on the ability of small businesses, or rather, let me say, bidders in the market to participate in public procurement. But I think what is also more worrying is that whenever we detect and highlight these issues, we have seen that there has been poor implementation of consequence management, meaning that whenever we identify non-compliance and there's irregular expenditure, sometimes there's fraudulent activities and corruption and things like that, consequence management in certain instances has not been implemented. And therefore, we've seen less participation by small businesses and other designated groups such as women, people with disabilities, and the youth, Chairperson, in public procurement at large. So, Chair, we internally also have our own issues that I thought that maybe it would be worth as part of, because this is the first time in particular I am presenting to this portfolio committee, to also present to the committee that we have come up with mechanisms to deal with the issues, with these issues that we have identified in public procurement. And some of those mechanisms, including the issuing of the instruction notes that we've issued over the number of years, as well as the issuing of circulars within the organs of state, in the municipal, in the local government sphere. Chairperson, we have implemented automated systems. We've implemented guidelines as well for accounting officers and accounting authorities on how to implement procurement SEM systems. We have started, Chairperson, working on introducing a public procurement bill, as I have provided earlier on, Chairperson, that is still in draft. However, we believe that operationally, as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we need to be strengthened. Our capacity needs to be strengthened to be able to deal with the issues of public procurement. We also believe that to enhance accountability within the system, we need to put more mechanisms to enhance transparency within the system, in the normal procurement processes themselves, but as well as within the processes of procurement by other means, meaning the deviations and the contract modifications. And we do that through the automations. We publish all the deviations that have been done by the organs of state on a quarterly basis, as well as the contract modifications that any South African can go and view and be able to hold them or require more information to ask questions and be able to hold organs of state accountable. We have put platforms within National Treasury where any South African whether it be an individual or it could be a small business or a civil society organization, can submit any complaint, any query, request for information, and which we directly respond to in a bid to enable stakeholders to participate in public procurement. However, Chairperson, I think it goes without saying that one key problem that has been identified over the years, Chairperson, is the issues of fraud and corruption within the public procurement system that is rife, and obviously the diminishing confidence from the public in public procurement, Chairperson. So those are the kind of dynamics and issues that we have to deal with on a daily basis. But we don't lose heart, Chairperson. We work on them and we push on them to try and make sure that we increase and build back the public confidence and strengthen and stabilize our public procurement in a bid to make sure that government achieves the objectives that have been set out. Chairperson, more at an operational level is that within the OCPO, we still have processes that are manual that we are currently working on to automate and make sure that because we deal with a lot of organs of state, because we deal with all the spheres of government, we make it easier to submit information, for us to process that information, for us to also create reports and report timeously to all the relevant stakeholders. As I've mentioned earlier on, capacities is also still a bit of a challenge within our division. What we've also seen to be also quite problematic is the incorrect or an insufficient submission of information by the organs of state that makes it difficult to provide an accurate and a complete picture or report of certain insights, Chairperson, that we are also working on to try and increase and enhance so that we can make sure that we get a more reliable and accurate information right from the source, whether it be through interface with systems, with other systems within the organs of state and so forth. So Chairperson, I think I've said quite a bit. This is the end of my presentation. Again, thank you so much for having us here. I hope that the presentation has given you enough food for thought and will be able to entice your engagement with us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
King, I was cut off. I will request Honorable Jacobs to take us through because for more than 40 minutes, I could not hear the presentation.
Noted, Chairperson. Mr. Jacobs, you can take over. However, for now, there's a hand from Mr. Kruger, but I think you control Honorable Jacobs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. King, and greetings, everybody. I also want to record our appreciation for the presentation. Before we note hands, I also want to acknowledge Africa Day and happy Africa Day to all of us on the platform and also to all people watching us. Africa Day is a reminder that we all are Africans and we need to deal with unifying, uniting and dealing with the issues in a solidarity and in a consistent way. So I see Honorable Kruger is the first hand. Let's just go through the list. Any other hand? Okay, Mr. Kruger, I think for us, and Mr. Honorable de Villiers, so it will be first Honorable Kruger and then Honorable de Villiers.
Thank you, Chair. Of course, we suspect that there is a lot of things that's going wrong in public procurement. But it's a shock when we hear all those things that are going wrong in state entities doing their procurement. So from a small business side, I think, again, small businesses are sucking at the, small businesses are getting the bad part of this whole situation. And there's two reasons for it. One is, of course, the red tape trying to get a tender for small businesses, especially the smaller or the micro and medium businesses. Small businesses do have enough staff to bypass red tape, but the medium-sized and micro-sized businesses, they're totally out of the situation because of red tape getting a tender with state entities. That's the first one. And the second one is, of course, corruption. And we all know if you don't have money to buy off a official, then your chance is much lower than a person that got the money to sort of bribe officials. So my question is then, Chair, that what is the department going to do about red tape? We have to simplify the process. And when I say simplify the process, I don't mean that we must open it for corruption now, because that's normally what happens. If the process is too simplified, then of course the corrupt people move in. That's the first question. And the second question is, what are we going to do about, you know, what is the consequences? We heard that there's consequence management, but we don't see the consequences. We heard all this corruption that's going on. I mean, it's in the public domain. The amount of corruption that is every day happening, but we don't see any consequences. So I will just like to know from her what she thinks must be the consequences and what processes must be put in place so that we can get either rid of the corruption or getting rid of corrupt officials. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable De Valier.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Temporary Chairperson. and a happy Africa Day to all colleagues and officials and everybody watching this this video. I would just like to join Honorable Jacobs in saying we are all Africans and we are very proud to be here on Africa. And I hope everybody enjoys their different heritages. I'd like to just and firstly thank Ms. Dacre for the presentation. I think it is a super important subject. If I'm not mistaken, the state in total spends almost R1 trillion a year on public procurement. And the Constitution says that public procurement must be spent in a way that actually grows the economy, but also brings forth transformation or empowerment into our society. You can just imagine that R1 trillion into the economy every year is a quite significant amount of money. So I've got three questions. The first one is, recently there was a court case, and I'm sure Ms. Dacre would know about it very well, where agribusiness took the National Treasury to court over the newest procurement tender guidelines. And the Constitutional Court found that Section 3 is unconstitutional. And Section 3, as I understand it in short, is basically
a very important, one of the important ways in which the state are currently writing all tenders. National Treasury then basically said that they are, you know, that they are, you see, they can't actually appeal the decision, so they've now asked the Constitutional Court for clarity on this. But in the meantime, and this is my real worry, it seems like National Treasury and most state departments are just carrying on with tenders with the same guidelines that have now been found unconstitutional. So my question is, what is Ms. Dacre's opinion about this? Because I fear for a small business that has won a tender now in the last 2 or 3 months from a state entity based on tender procurement guidelines that are found to be unconstitutional. So that means that any of the other tenderers that, you know, are unhappy about the small business who won the tender can now go challenge that tender in a court of law and probably have it overturned. Now, I don't need to explain to you the devastating consequences that this can have on the small business, because what usually happens is if you win a tender, then you employ people, you raise capital, you get ready to deliver the service or the product for the tender which you've won. So to then get caught in court 6 or 12 months later with a court ruling that says, well, these tender procurement guidelines were unconstitutional and the small business should never have received it. You know, that destroys jobs, that destroys businesses. So I'm very, very worried about the fact that the state is still procuring using guidelines that are unconstitutional. So I'd like her input on that. Then secondly, one of the problems experienced by small landlords, and especially for agencies like CEDA, is when lease agreements come up for renewal or when CEDA wants to procure a new office, that process of getting a lease agreement is treated like a normal product or service. So it goes through all the normal SEM guidelines. The problem with that is that that's not how the property industry works. If CEDA wants to rent an office, then it will probably either employ a broker or itself go and look for what are the available offices, what do they cost, choose one based on price and suitability. But once they've chosen the office, now they have to suddenly go through these supply chain management processes, which means they have to put out a tender for an office and then advertise it. While they are going through those motions, the landlord, who just wants a tenant, finds another tenant, fills that space, and the CEDA ends up not getting the office they wanted. And this also happens when it comes to lease renewals. So CEDA would be very happy in a specific office space. They might be renting from a small business owner who's got a small building in a town. Then the lease renewal comes up. Now, instead of just negotiating a lease renewal on a market-related price, CEDA needs to go and tender. They have to advertise they're going to renew their lease and who else wants them to rent from them. And in that process, the landlord just goes and says, well, I'm not going to wait for you to go through this red tape supply chain process. I'm not giving you a product or a service. I'm a landlord. You're renting space from me. I've got someone else who want to rent the space. I just want money in the bank. So I'm just trying to illustrate to you that when it comes to lease agreements and property, in my view, it should not be treated like a product or a service because that hampers the government from firstly leasing the appropriate premises for CEDA offices and the rest, but it also hampers landlords who don't want to deal with government entities because the processes of just negotiating a lease agreement are so onerous and difficult to do. So those are my main questions. Sorry, just a third question. I'm taking up a lot of time. I apologize. But my third question relates to when it comes to corruption, we all know that one of the major problems of corruption is that the officials who award tenders, who are in control of the procurement processes, award these tenders to businesses who have family members of them in them or friends of them in them. So it's basically set up before the time. So my question is, what is your office doing to try and stop government officials and politicians, public representatives, from doing business with the state in an illegal manner, and making sure that tenders are awarded for their friends or family. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable De Valiers. Honourable Matthew Lerba, it's your chance. Pawat, your turn.
Thank you, honorable members and colleagues. Greetings to everybody. I thank you for this opportunity. I'm audible enough in that side, Chairman.
Yes, you are audible. Please proceed. We can hear you clearly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My concern is just that. I'm happy that the previous speaker has hit it to what exactly in my heart was the real concern. We've been raising these issues of our SMMEs being victimized. Our SMMEs are victimized and are in a very devastating conditions under so-called tenders. Firstly, there is that issue that we must address first. I can see the red tapes and everything that is trying to put on the table the how to structure the bylaws and everything that can be able to help the SMMEs in this tender processes. But talking about the tenders is where corruption roots are. If we can deal with the politicians in municipalities, in every sector of government, because this thing, now if you can check, 90% of tenders are awarded based on corrupt activities, where a tender is being awarded to a particular company for purposes of money exchange. A certain company is being awarded a tender only to receive that money in the name of that company, but the purpose is not to give a good purpose of servicing people, of benefiting our small businesses. Because remember, when the tender is awarded, maybe not in a small business, but is awarded to a particular big company, we know that SMMEs, in a form of subcontracting, they are going to benefit. But how are they going to benefit if the main contractor is being awarded a tender, and the politicians that are they know how or why they did this tender, they come in a back door and take that money. For instance, you can go to Matatiel in the sports center there. There is a sports center that is being built there, but only to find out that the main contractor was told to bring money for this thing of festival, what. And then the main contractor, when we were doing oversight and checking, why are the small businesses not getting their money, because they've performed their duties and now they want to get their money, only to find out that the politicians in the tender system there who were awarding the tender, they took the money.
Honorable Matulelba, are you still there?
Yes, the government spheres or government to do something must do it directly. The government must do it directly so that we can account, because we can't, when we go to the government, maybe it's an infrastructure of the construction. You go there in the construction offices, they say, no, this thing is done by so-and-so, Mr. So-and-so, someone. So we can't manage it right, even for to stand for the small businesses. We can't go and manage it right, because there are some purposes that we don't know, and there is no one who can be accountable in the business sector that is being given the services. So my suggestion is that, yes, we can come up with rules and regulations and whatever, but the tender system itself is not a good thing to do. As government, we can't promote the tender because tenders are only serving the corrupt activities. Even those monies of unrest and everything, they go through tenders, and today people are crying left, right, and center. I just want to submit this. We must deal with the tender first before we go to regulations, because it's not helping us at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matulelwa. Honorable Mtunjani, I saw your hand. Do you want to speak?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. And morning to the colleagues. Yeah, Chairperson, it's fine. I think I'm covered here, yeah, because it is very much clear from the point of view that we have a common enemy here, which is fraud on the side of these tender system things. So my colleagues have spoken a mouthful. We agree. It's a common problem that we have here. Maybe as a committee or as a government, we then need to see what steps can be taken so that people can be accountable. Because we can't have a situation where our small businesses are instead suffering instead of being helped, but not because they didn't get the funds, because the funds were there, but they were misused. They were taken by some other people instead of the rightful people that were supposed to get those funds. So it's a common problem, Chairperson. We all agree as a committee or as government, we really, really need to do something about these issues of tender. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Colleagues, if I am allowed to take off the chair hat and then also make input. Honorable Members and Ms. Staker, I think I also want to record our appreciation for this presentation. When this portfolio committee said that we must invite the office of the chief procurement officer. Hein, I note you, I'm going to give you now. Let me just also make my input. We felt it very important first to start from a point of understanding. What is the role of the office of the chief procurement officer? And what do we want to achieve out of this? So I think for us, I think we appreciate the role, Mistaker and the team, and the role that you need to play. And we also acknowledge that there's still lots of room for improvement. But I think my understanding of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, your role is meant to help us as a government manage our resources effectively, have an overarching approach to dealing with procurement. And I think if you look at Honorable de Villiers' point about there's more than 1 trillion rand annually that's being spent on supply chain. I think the question that we as members of parliament and public reps are, can we improve the developmental impact of that money? I think Honorable Matulelwa also makes the point about what is needed for outsourcing, which is tender process, and what is needed for insourcing, which talks about building the capacity of the state to do it ourselves and working with communities. So our main objective as this small business committee is to say that we're establishing small businesses, we're creating environment, we're getting the money that we have from small business department to help and encourage small business. But a big procurement policy is that the small business, the informal traders, must benefit from the trillion rand that government collectively at the municipality, at the provincial level and a national level has to buy. And so we want to hear from your office, what are the steps put in place to help us achieve that developmental objective? I think the next one of our next capacity building sessions will be is where we're going to invite the private sector. To ask the same question. In your supply chain process, what are the things that you're going to do for small business? So I think for us, the one thing that you spoke about is supply chain norms and standards. I'd like to hear maybe mistake, what examples is there of a norm and standard that will help us benefit from small business. We talked about procuring 1,000 locally made products and services. I think it was spoken in the present state of the nation. Do you have transversal procurement items that says, okay, we're going to procure in a large way and cost effective, and it's we buy for everything. So for example, school shoes or school feeding or this, is there a national transversal approach to dealing with this? You also spoke about the M&E monitoring and evaluation frameworks. Now, I think that's in your portfolio. I'd like to get your comment around what did our, it's a generic question, but what did our 1 trillion that we procured last year in the last financial year buy for us as South Africans, and how many small, medium, micro enterprises benefited from that? Do you have a breakdown of maybe the profiles, and what are we going to do more to ensure that we have a biasness towards not getting the links? Because I think there is a trust deficit. I think a lot of members spoke about the supply chain officials and the political elites linked to them, and how they procure these things for selfish interests, for greed and corruption, as opposed for broader inclusive growth. What is the notable things that we need to do? Now, on the agribusiness and the national treasury, I think Honorable de Villiers' point, I think that is where we disagree. I think we still believe that we can't maintain white privilege. And so the Constitution, in the way it gives work, or the we must affirm the historically disadvantaged communities, but not political elites. So I think in all our deliberations, there must be a focus for women, for historically disadvantaged communities, for rural, for township, for youth, and disabled. I think there is a strong call for that. You also spoke about the ICT needs, the automation and modernization. And what is the plan to ensure that those registered databases, those ICT, the e-governance is more accessible to small businesses that is there. I also want to talk about the questions on, let me just make my open while we talk, the issues of using this as a strategic partnership with state procurement to bridge the divide between small businesses and big businesses. Because we procure big goods and services, but we need to ensure that big businesses also work with in partnership and buy from small businesses. Sometimes there's irrational and inflexible requirements like the SIDB grading. And I think Honorable de Villiers also spoke about the property requirements. I think we need to have the flexibility and the capacity so that we don't encourage corruption and fraud, but we also don't stifle opportunities for small businesses, especially in the construction, in the wholesale, in the financial services. I think there's a lot of work to be done. On the sale of tender documents, one of the strategic motives behind the creation of the Office of the Chief Procurement Office is to modernize and centralize procurement. One point of entrance. So we have the e-tender system. It is fairly subdued. In fact, I think it's not what it can be. And I think what are the areas where we can improve this e-tender system? And I think we also know that the bid documents are still being sold, and there's still a private market. There's still parallel private websites that are much better than the e-tender system of government. So how are you going to counter that? I think the other issue that we also spoke about was the cancellation of bids. I think you also mentioned that. So let me pause there. Hopefully this will also trigger. So I also want to acknowledge your point about the key issues of the procurement build. How do you build your own capacity? Because you are the protectors of the purse, the public purse. So we need to protect you as the public protectors of the purse. So I think the capacity issue that you raised, I think it's well noted. We will lobby and support the initiative going forward. Let me pause there, and I see I've also triggered additional hands. Honorable April?
Thank you, Chairperson. Excuse me, I can put my video on just a little bit and then put it off again for the purposes of network and so forth. Happy Africa Day to everybody. Good to see all of you here. Thank you so much. Let me welcome the presentation that has been given. It is very good to be receiving this kind of presentation. The facts that you have raised, and I also want to acknowledge the concerns that my colleagues, honorable members of parliament, has raised. It's absolutely true. You know, before I was deployed into government as a parliamentarian, I was a small business owner. And one of the things as a small business owner that is very cumbersome and disheartening is that you spend quite a bit of your money to run after tender, drive for site visits and all of that, just to find at the end of the day that your money goes to waste, because oftentimes these things has been pre-assigned. And going for a tender is just part of a process that a person goes to and never get opportunity. I must also not shy away from the fact that we know that there is many officials who run the system for their own benefit, and also people outside, business people who manipulate the system for themselves. I want to check the cybersecurity of the cybersecurity side of our system as it is laid out, the system of a CSD. How does it align? How does it make sure that I know that when you go into CSD, you can pick up SARS, you can pick up, I know that the municipality systems and the state system work like that, but still you find people it's able to crack the code somehow and get into the system. I want to hear a little bit more about the security of the system as it is. The tender process is very cumbersome. It's complex, and it's something for a new entrepreneur that when they come into the bidding process, that from the point of access to advertising stage, submitting the tenders, it's a costly thing. It's there's obstacles, and I want to know, is there things that we or you guys are doing to ensure that new enterprises gets a break into the market? What I'm trying to say is, how do we ensure that not the same people get business over and over again? Secondly, I want to say that small businesses especially find it particularly, get it, not only is it hard, but the portfolio committee must also see that how are we going to deal with the bullies? Big business is really a bully in the industry. And the fronters, those who are fronting with small enterprises, as if they are small enterprises, those that are using their maids as Black woman-owned enterprises, while it is actually not, how are we dealing with that? Is there a system in place that you are using to verify the validity of those who claim to be tendering? Another thing that I want to bring up is the fact that we are asking for leniency in specific things like procurement of officers, but I think it would be unfair to say that landlords must be treated differently from others. And when it comes to the constitutional matters, that the matters of what the court findings is, if there is a court finding and it is being sent on review, the matter then remains sub judice and should not be brought into this meeting for us to have a discussion with regards to the findings and so on. So the matter of the court, I think we must park it. I will take a second bite again, but for now, let me pause. because I want others to also get a chance. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. And my video, I will leave my video off. You know, I'm here in the rural areas and my signal is very, very weak. But Chair, you touch it, and I just want to be very sure. The public procurement, the money they spend are public money. It's taxpayers' money. So I just want to find out, is there any systems in place to make sure that the taxpayers get value for the money? Because, you know, we heard many, many stories where a contractor come and change a globe in a government building, and they charge up to 150 rand per globe. And, you know, you can buy the globes for 450 at Pick and Pay. So, and it's a big problem. So I just want to find out, is there any systems in place where we protect and get value for money, for, you know, value for money from buyers? Because it's taxpayers' money we're talking about. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Kula. Good question. Honorable De Villiers, take that.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. I'll try to be as quick as possible. Just firstly, Honorable Jacobs, I just really want to reply to what you said. There's absolutely no world in which myself or the DA, the Democratic Alliance, wants to uphold white privilege, I can assure you. In fact, we very much would like to see the empowerment of people that are disempowered. And my biggest concern and our concern as the DA is that current procurement are being used under the guise of black economic empowerment to enrich an elite group of politically connected individuals. And we are the first political party and people who would raise our hands and say, let's identify the small businesses. Let's identify the people who are actually not empowered. Whoever they may be, the South Africans that are not empowered, and let's empower them. Let's not use procurement guidelines to just empower those who are already empowered. So I just want to clarify that really is our stance, and that really is my heart for South African empowerment. And then secondly, I would just like to respectfully disagree with Honorable April. The meaning of something being sub judice is when it is still being considered by a court, when it is still in court proceedings. The Constitutional Court, as we all know, is the highest court in the land. It has made a majority ruling. That means that there's no more avenue. You cannot appeal anymore. What it has said is final. And all that National Treasury has asked the court is more clarity. So it's just basically a letter to them saying, we just don't understand what you've said, but it is not, the outcome cannot be changed anymore. So it is not sub judice, and we are, as a committee, 100% in our rights to discuss it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable De Villiers. And just from my side, I'm pleased to say that at least we agree that we can't maintain white privilege, and we all have to deal with the legacies of apartheid and our past. But I also share with you that we need to make it broad-based. We need to be as inclusive and shared as possible. So I think we agree with the sentiments. And the main purpose of today's Chief Procurement Officer presentation is to get that. I think the idea, as all of us agree, that it's a good idea to have an overarching structure to deal with the procurement. I think they're still in their finding stage. I'm not sure how old is the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, but I think what we're saying is that there is room for improvement. And we're saying that all the issues that we've raised, all the issues of the trust deficit, I think we come from a period where South Africans are not trusting the officials and the public representatives. And so what we want to do is we want to restore confidence, restore integrity, restore transparency in our processes. Our procurement processes, if it's done right, it's meant to be transformative, it's meant to be redressed, it's meant to deal with the legacies of our past, and it must include all of us as South Africans. So I think we can debate politically the Constitutional Court, but I think the Constitutional Court also is instructive in saying that we must ensure that whatever we do reconciles with a non-discriminatory approach. So I think we are on the same page. I want to check if there's further hands. Let me see. Otherwise, I'll hand over to you, Ms. Dacre, just to give some responses and comments. I think from our side, we are pleased with this presentation, and we'll definitely want to call you back. I think we moved from the premises of first understanding. So your presentation was broad in terms of it gives us a overview. I think some of the issues that we've raised now speaks to the nuts and bolts and the details. And if you can respond to some of the questions that we had, the specifics, but definitely we'd want to call you back and see how, what is the definite program to ensure that we deal with making greater impact in the work that you do, the key issues you've raised, the trends and observations. So for us, the trends and observations, we can't ask you to be concerned about them. I think for us, we want to know what you're going to do. What is the plan? What are the steps? Because I think we as South Africans can describe our problems. The problem is the implementation, and the problem is the what's to be done. So if we can't do a detailed dive into it, maybe we'll invite you again with more specifics. But I think our challenge is around how do we deal with the trends in observation? How do you deal? Is there a blacklisting for transgressors? Is there a list? Is there a lifestyle audit for supply chain management officials in all of them? Do you do a polygraph test? Do you do consequences management? Do you have wide-ranging powers to subpoena or procure or to, if there is a particular problem? So the big problem is if we look at all our organs of governance, it seems that supply chain management is particularly rife in particular provinces and also in particular local government areas. Is there that trend that you can respond to? And also, what are the type of interventions if there is gouging, price gouging, competition, collusion, and malfeasance happening? Is there a relationship with your office and our law enforcement agencies? So let me pause there if there's no other hands. Let me just quickly do a quick check.
Sorry, Chairperson, my hand was raised.
Oh, okay. My apologies. I see you, Hein, and then I will give to Mr. Dacre. Honorable Hein.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Ms. Dacre, yeah, really your presentation was broad, but you touched very important points. I want to just bring the attention of the portfolio committee and yourself, and you may not need to answer me on some of the things that I want to state, but I need to put it for the record. You know that South Africa has one of the highest small business mortality rates in the world. It's in excess of 80% of small businesses die in our country. And this is because of the barriers to entry to protect the companies that currently dominate sectors. And you could go and read the market report by the Competition Commission, which says that. I want to know, what are we doing about that? Even if some do appear, they will probably remain small because the barriers keep them down. As a result, for every success story, several businesses do not make it through the first 2 years of existence. In the past, our committee concluded that there are a few pertinent areas for further examination by National Treasury and the Department of Small Business Development. These include, but is not limited to, strategic use of the state procurement to breach the divide between the small and well-established businesses. In spite of being a major procurer of goods and services, the state does not compel or make it obligatory for the private sector to partner or buy from SMMEs and cooperatives. Yet in countries like our neighbors in Swaziland and so on, the dominant players of South Africa easily comply with what the state there wants. Is there something that we are putting into law or that we are putting into our process that ensures that we can create opportunity for small South African businesses? In supply chain management, the corruption issue is one that is not new. It is something that has been there. It is something that is, the consequence management is of this nature that not even a single supply chain official that I know about who has manipulated the system has been fired. What consequence management do we have for people who are found wanting, not just fired, but also attached their private properties and things that has been, what kind of consequence management systems do you have in place? And as I conclude, I would like to say that, thank you, Honorable de Villiers. It is really not our time for politicking. This is the time to really to speak up for our people, all our people, and make sure that South Africans benefit from what we do in the state. We would like to hear the responses about the 1 trillion spent. You have really put something in the center, and that is the thing that I would want to hear about, the managed consequence management, and I also want to hear about the 1 trillion. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Matulelwa, you're going to be the last speaker. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. I thank you for the second chance. I wanted to raise a very critical matter that we have just registered on small businesses and the big businesses. You know what happens, Chair? The small businesses, they are in business because of their skills. They do have skills. If we can mention the street vendors, the all those people who are doing the work of plumbing and everywhere else. If you can go to Ugu district in KZN where they are doing water, the district is outsourced the responsibility to a big business. But those who are subcontractors, they have got skills. They have gone to school for plumbing. They are supplying with a real staff of skills. So that's the another thing that we want. I want us to check it because it is a very big problem. Someone becomes someone register a company in basis of getting tenders without any skill. If you can go around and if you can do a proper oversight, you'll find out that a main contractor doesn't have any skills anywhere, but is just having documents, BEE certificates and everything says this and everything. But when it comes to skills, is those people that we are always also of, or some of them, they are employees. We just encourage them to register their own businesses based on their skills. They've got nothing but their skills. They are in terms of reaching the requirements of getting the tender. They don't have those things because they rely on money that is only their own money that they have got as the employees. Then they collect those monies and start their own businesses. But you will find out that we are rewarding wrong people with tenders. That is why we encourage that we must not outsource that much. We must, our tenders, maybe they must have something that says a person personally that is owning that business must have a skill on that particular tender, must have a skill and a certificate or whatever that proves that this person knows the work, because we just reward people different kinds of tenders without them having a skill of cooking, if I may put it in a very simple way. They can't sell banana, but they are given a tender to supply the government entity or a government space. So that is why I just want us also to hit on, because the skills problem is a problem, because those who are small businesses, they've got skills, they don't have money. Those with which are the those main contractors, they don't have skills, but they've got money. That's what we must check, because we will never go wrong if we reward or we give these small businesses to supply directly. There will be no crisis, more especially if we go to things of checking the things that are maybe the work is done already. So for us, when we go and do oversight, we won't fail anyway. So the money will go straight direct to what it meant to be. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lelwa. Ms. Dekker, it's your chance. And then once Ms. Dekker is finished, I'll hand over to our chair, Masizwela. Okay, Ms. Dekker, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm going to try and answer as much as I can, but I don't think it's all the questions that I will be able to answer to, especially the questions that are related to policy and legal kind of matters. It's quite technical, and I think it requires probably more time to unpack the technicalities around it and how it impacts on small businesses, because it certainly impacts on small businesses in a large scale, because the court judgment is on the preferential procurement regulations specifically. And the judgment declared the regulations invalid simply just because subsection 2 of section 217 of the Constitution provides that an organ of state may implement a preferential procurement policy. So I think it requires to be unpacked and what it means specifically for small business, because that is the policy that was put in place by government to advanced designated group. So you asked, Chair, in your questions, give me an example of a policy that is in place that advances a designated group. So within those regulations, we had policies around localization, which meant that whenever a procurement or a tender is awarded to a particular service provider, they were required to use skills and resources within a particular community rather than bringing in those skills and resources from outside when they are available within that particular community. We also had policies around local content, which required organs of state to procure local goods rather than importing particular goods from outside countries and things like that. But with the constitution, with the court judgment that makes those regulations then invalid, we currently do not have those policies in place. And that's what National Treasury is working on. Chairperson, I must state that the judgment does not say that it is unconstitutional to put those kind of policies in place. It is just saying that it was not for the Minister of Finance to put those policies in place, but for the organs of state to do so. So I think, Chair, maybe it would be worthwhile for the community, for the committee to spend some time maybe with us as well, and we deliberate specifically on this issue. And then, Chairperson, around the implementation of tenders after the court judgment, I think what becomes very important to understand is the fact that government must continue delivering services even though there is that court judgment. However, government must do it in a manner that is still compliant with the legislative environment. The court judgment does not provide that there shouldn't be tenders that must be put in place. It's talking about preferential procurement and the framework in which the preferential procurement policies can then be implemented. And therefore, it leaves it to the accounting officers and accounting authorities to make sure that then they adjust their procurement measures and procurement processes to make sure that if they continue with procurement, they continue with it in a manner that is compliant. And that is for the responsibility of the accounting officers and the accounting authorities to make sure that they do that. However, the honorable member also mentioned that, you know, it becomes problematic for a small business to be awarded a tender to be later, then the tender is then set aside and it has to be cancelled or contract has to be cancelled while costs have been incurred. And I certainly agree with that. And I think that is why it is important that not only National Treasury as the procurement authority in this case, but all organs of state must ensure that tender processes are adequate and are done in a manner that is compliant so that they can stand the test of legal processes. That's the first. But secondly, Chairperson, I think small businesses in themselves also have a role to play, because if you are in a particular market, you must understand your market. You must know the regulatory requirements that you must comply with, you know, to be able to actively participate in the process. What I mean by actively participating in the process, Chairperson, is not only responding to the tender, is the ability to scrutinize a specification and say, hang on, this specification is not structured in a manner that this market operates. And be able to engage with organizations like ourselves as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, because we have the platform and the mechanisms where organs of state, private sector companies come to us and raise a concern around how tenders are being structured, how specifications are designed and everything. And we engage and we make sure that the organs of state then redesign the specification in the manner that the market can adequately and sufficiently respond to. So Chair, I think maybe we ought to discuss further and deeper in around those issues. And insofar as consequence management is concerned, Chair, our legislation or the PFMA is structured such that there are powers that are given to the accounting officers and the accounting authorities to make sure that they take action against officials that officials as well as suppliers that are involved in issues of corruption, fraud, or malpractices within a procurement processes. And it is unfortunate that the framework within which consequence management has to be dealt with for officials is through the Labor Relations Act rather than the PFMA in itself. So I think the question is, why are these consequence management actions not taken? What are the accounting officers and accounting authorities doing to make sure that they implement the appropriate labor relations prescripts to make sure that consequence management is taken against officials? But secondly, PFMA grants powers to accounting officers to take actions against service providers as well. There is restriction of service providers who are found through investigations to have been involved in wrongdoing and corrupt activities, Chairperson. But we find and we have seen that wherever investigations have recommended particular service providers to be restricted, it is not done. Why is it not done? What is then the action that needs to be taken by the executive authority to make sure that they hold accounting officers and accounting authorities responsible for the actions that they are supposed to take, Chair? And unfortunately, Chairperson, I don't think I can really talk to consequence consequence management or what should be done when political office bearers are the ones that are involved in corrupt activities, because I think that's not within my ambit of what I do that I can talk to that. But I think certainly it is a question worth asking and getting an answer to, and we make sure, because you know, one of the biggest challenges, what makes corruption and fraud so challenging, is not the policies, the legislation, the systems, the processes, and so forth. It is the human behavior. It is the behavioral aspect of human people involved in the processes, people that are tasked with implementing the policies and the processes that have been put in place. Because human behavior, if a person has an intention to do wrong, they will find any loophole and an opportunity within a system to achieve what they intend to achieve. Therefore, there is very little that we can do systematically and from a policy perspective to change human behavior. It can be done, but the downfall of using legislation and regulation to change human behavior leads to exactly what Honorable de Villiers was talking about earlier on around leases and accommodation and so forth, and the red tape, because you then use regulations and policies and instructions to direct. You create a rigid environment. There is no room to move around for innovation, or very little room for innovation, that people do what is right. Through instructions.
We've lost Ms. Dacre, Chairperson. Maybe it's just on my side.
Let's just check. Ms. Dacre, are you there? Yeah, it seems she's out. I'm not sure how we're going to deal with this.
Maybe, I lost the meeting. Can you hear me?
Yes, we so pleased you're back.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so I was still saying that it is a difficult and a fine balance to make, where you have to balance compliance with legislation, regulations, and all the instructions, while at the same time you want value for money, you want competitiveness, you want transformation, and so forth. However, it is something that we're going to have to work together, Chairperson. It unfortunately can't be something that, in my view, can only be the task of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer or just National Treasury alone. It has to be a coordinated effort within government. We have to certainly strengthen the laws that deal with corruption. And Chairperson, to come to your question, whether we have relationship with law enforcement agencies, and we have processes in place. We engage with law enforcement agencies around the different investigations that need to be done, and around the vetting of officials. But however, Chairperson, as you may know, that the procurement bill is one. A solution that we are really looking forward to consolidating, or trying to deal with a number of issues that exist within the public procurement system. So, Chair, I think in a nutshell, I've tried to respond to the majority of the question. I would request that anything that we have not adequately responded to, Chairperson, we get given the questions, and we will have a write-up where we respond sufficiently to the question. You are more than welcome to call us back again to discuss different topical issues or challenges that we have raised, if you want us to unpack more and unpack for you what exactly are we doing in those key challenges and what we believe can be further done by any other stakeholders, we are happy to come back and have the discussion with you, Chairperson. But Chair, I would also like you ask that you, we give my colleague and Ntate Tlaba an opportunity to also come in and talk around the issues of automation systems that I have been put in place and how they are assisting us and can assist at this point in time. Thank you, Chair.
No, good morning, Chair, and good morning to honorable members. My name is Dumelon Tlaba. So I'll just basically talk to a few things, mainly that relates to matters of red tape. I think it was Honorable Kruger that had actually raised the question regarding how are we dealing with red tape? So you are aware of what you implemented regarding the central supply database, of which we introduced mainly to assist small businesses, mainly for them to be able to do business easier and to be able to access opportunities of government much easier without having to travel all over and register in multiple places, and to simplify compliance matters, example tax, they don't longer need to go to SARS to collect tax clearance certificates and so forth. So that's one way, but on top of this, so that we can be able to try and assist with issues that we've been picking up regarding matters of corruption and human intervention, we believe that automating majority of these processes will help us in a very great deal, because we can definitely eliminate manual interventions or human interactions in terms of these particular processes. So you will note that in the coming months, what we're going to do with our current e-tender publication portal, currently we've only been able to publish tender documents, but we are now going to take it even a step further, whereby we're going to say now, SMMEs can now be able to respond to their tenders online. We can start now being introducing online evaluations of this particular and automated evaluations of this particular tenders where it is possible, so that we can start removing the manual human intervention in the process. And with that, it will help us also to deal with transparency, because if we automate these particular processes, then we can be able to deal with issues of employees of the state or beneficial ownership, whereby people are linked to particular organs of state and are participating in these particular tenders. Because currently, as much as we are identifying, let's say, employees of the state that wants to do business with the state again, we still see that in 10 particular scenarios, as much as data and information is provided to procuring entities and buyers, but those particular cases, they still proceed and people still conclude contracts, although they can have the information, they see it as part of their reports that they pull out of the central supply database, that certain particular directors are also employed in this particular organs of state, but orders are generated to those individuals, and we wonder how those are actually happening, and then they get to be raised by the Auditor General later on. So we believe that with automating these particular processes, then we can be able to stop these activities from continuing, and those particular procurement initiatives will definitely be helping us with transparency, and we can be able to stop those particular actions from continuing. There was also a question that came from a request from Honorable Jacobs regarding whether we have data regarding how is the actually money spent, especially on SMMEs or small businesses from procurement perspective. That is also something of which we can be able to share with you from a national and provincial government. We've got a view in terms of a breakdown on the size of enterprises, whether it's an EME with a particular turnover, was it black owned, how much procurement spend actually went to women and so forth. So that is something that we can also share with yourself after this particular engagement, so that you can also have an idea as to where is the money actually going to. And we are aiming also to improve transparency, as Ms. Dacre had indicated earlier, whereby all these deviations are also published to the public. We're also trying to put also all the contracts of which are concluded for government and the awards are made to public, so that members of the public can be able to see, and civil society can also see that particular information and be able to query where it's regarded, and people can be able to start asking relevant questions regarding particular procurement activities. And all this data that we're collecting also with all the law enforcement agencies, from SARS to fusion centers and so forth, so that we can be able to try and curb these particular activities, and different agencies can also be able to fulfill their mandates. So yeah, now I'm going to stop there, Chair, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kumilo. I see Heinz, your hand is up, but I also want to give back to our Chair, Honorable Siswela. So Heinz, just quickly.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the explanation, Tumelo. Yeah, thank you very much. What I wanted to just quickly check, Chair, there's a directive from the National Treasury that relates to the 90-day payment. This would be extremely regressive in terms of what the for small businesses, because you know that small businesses is really managed on cash flow and so forth. Could I just get some kind of explanation with regards to that? I don't know if it is within the ambit of the people that we are speaking with currently, and if they are aware of the directive that has been issued by the National Treasury of 90-day payment, and just to clarify if they can. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I will allow that. Is there any takers, mistaker, or Tumelo, is there, do you want to just respond to this quickly? Is there a circular of the 90 days? And just give a response to Ms. Honorable April.
That we are aware of is the one of 30 days. But it's not within our ambit, it's within the Office of the Accountant General. They deal with non-payment or late payment, so I wouldn't be able to answer that question certainly for certain things.
Okay, let's park that, and I think that will be one of the additional questions that we will share with you, and thanks for your offer to engage with us on a continuous basis. I want to invite our Chair now just to do concluding remarks and summary. Chair, are you able to take back your meeting? Okay. It seems that the Chair still occupied. Let me check with Mr. King. Is there any other issues that we need to deal with in terms of the agenda?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chairperson. If we are true with the office of the procurement officer, I think you can release them, because we're just having one set of minutes. Okay,
just before that, let me then formally thank them, Ms. Dacre, and your team, the Office of the Chief Procurement Office, on behalf of this Portfolio Committee, Small Business Development. We want to record our appreciation for you coming, presenting, and we look forward to building the relationship with yourself. I think from our side, we will definitely submit our members and submit a list of written questions. You do very critical, important work. So I think on behalf of all South Africans, we want to commend you. We want to also ask you to remain clean, remain focused on the task of serving all our people without fear and favor. I think there's room for improvement. I think there's a lot of work that you are already doing. So we believe the glass is half full. We're getting there. We need to root out corruption and greed, and procurement, the whole supply chain process must build our country, build our future. The procurement, even if it is preferential, must be in a way that is transformative, it's inclusive, it benefits those that are meant to benefit, and we get developmental investment on the taxpayers' money. So I think we want to appreciate the work that you do. We know there's a lot of challenges, but we also want you to keep your head up high, hold your chin up, and keep up the good work. So with that, we want to release you and thank you again. And we will definitely stay in touch with you through the officials. Thank you very much, Ms. Dakin.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the honorable members.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Okay. Mr. King, if you can then just take us through outstanding matters.
Chairperson, these are the next in the agenda. It was consideration of this minutes of the 18th of May 2022, which were sent to members for their reading. Then we can consider them, and then if needs adoption, we adopt them.
I think if you can just scroll a bit faster, Mr. King. Please proceed. Members, I think here you have it. This was the minutes of our last meeting. Let me first check if there's any corrections before we call for adoptions. Is this an accurate reflection of our meeting? I then invite members now to adopt and second this minute. On behalf of our chair.
Honorable April, I move for the adoption of the minutes presented as a true reflection of what has transpired in the meeting. I also have no additions or spelling.
Recording in progress.
It was just the consideration of the minutes, and then we can go to closing remarks and close.
No, thank you, everybody. And we want to thank everybody, especially the presentation and all the members for your valuable input to this presentation. I think it was very informative. It's very important work that the Office of the Chief Procurement Office does. And I think we will engage the space. We will continue keeping our officials accountable to ensure that we have more transparency and openness with the money that we spend. Colleagues, I want to wish you all well for the Africa Day, wherever you are. Let us continue the spirit of Ubuntu, of mensvaardigheid, of common humanity. And let us move away from the divisions of the past, the them and us, the divide and rule. Let us, as Africans, however we find ourselves, reach out to each other. Let's heal the divisions and the legacies of the past. Let's confront the issues and of slavery, of colonialism, the legacy of apartheid. And on this Africa Day, define our own Africanness, but in common humanity with others. So I want to wish all of you a happy Africa Day, and we'll see each other in the plenary. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much. Africa.
Ayibuye.
Thank you, Chairperson.